Hi, Peter.
How are you?
It's afternoon here in Cape Town, but I suppose where you are, it's probably morning.
It is morning, actually. You want us to do video, or you just want it to be
No,
audio?
audio is fine. Yes.
Audio is good. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, well, it's 10 a.m. here. Let me raise my volume a little bit here.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, it's
Wonderful.
10 a.m. here. It's 10 a.m. here,
Yes,
and
I think as you've probably gathered from the first two interviews that I shared with you, I'm very interested in the writing Africa and writing by Africans, and especially the question of language and translation to maximize the reach of one's writing. And
Yes.
you are someone that we have interacted a lot. You have been foremost on this issue of promoting literature that is accessible to the African people, and especially written in a language that is accessible. Your mastery of English, French, and Pidgin English is outstanding. And I thought,
I'm very humbled.
yes, I thought that this conversation would not be complete without reaching out to you to have your opinion. But as I normally do, we start with you introducing yourself beyond me saying that I'm speaking with Dr. Peter Vakunta, a Cameroonian who has worked extensively on in different parts of Africa, especially here in South Africa, and is currently in the US. So you take over from that there and introduce yourself, and we continue accordingly. Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much, brother. Again, like I said, it's a big honor for me to be able to interact with you this morning on my side and this afternoon your side on a topic that I hold very dear, that is very close to my heart, and that is writing in Pidgin English and other. I presume it come from Glass, but we'll talk about that as well. But again, I'm Peter Vakunta. Very quickly, I hail from Cameroon, of course, and I did work at the Presidency of the Republic for years before moving to South Africa, where I taught, first of all, at high school and then at the University of South Africa, UNISA, in Pretoria. And then I came to the United States in 2001, and I've been in academia. I did my doctorate at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and then from there I've been teaching for a number of institutions, including the University of Wisconsin itself, and then the University of Indianapolis, the Defense Language Institute, where I'm currently a professor of languages and cultures. And like you said, Prof, I've tried to be prolific. I mean, what is the use of a mind if it's not productive? I've been very, very active in academia, trying to write books in French English and Pidgin English, as well as Kamfrangle.
Yes. Could you just introduce maybe those who are listening to us to some of your writings, especially those that speak to the theme of the day, both Pidgin English and Kamfrangle, which is a combination of indigenous languages and French and English as languages with a European origin.
That's right, Prof.
Yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
I've written. Let's start with Pidgin. I do have collections of short stories in Pidgin English. So I think the one that comes to mind real quick is Tori's Suite for Cameroon Pidgin English.
Yeah.
There's also a number of poetry collections that I have, Come Talk and other stories from the Cradle. I have what do I have? I tend to forget all those things. Now I do have.
Yes.
Manjunga Talk is another one that I wrote in Pidgin English. So we have that. We have what do I have? What do I have again? I do have. I have to have titles in.
Yes.
In come from, and people who are interested can get all the
can
the,
get all of them.
I'm on Amazon.
Yes, and I do remember you also have a book of tribute to Lapiro Dembanga, the Cameroonian,
yes.
Late Cameroonian musician who distinguished himself in playing in precisely in Kamfrangle.
Absolutely, yes, yeah, yes, yeah. Bro. When Lapiro passed, peace be upon him. You and I decided we should. I mean, you asked me if I could produce a work on him. Of course, I did a big volume on him. I think it's a tribute to a Cameroonian icon. That I did, devoted to Lapiro Dembanga. Lapiro Dembanga did not create Kamfrangle, but he was one of the musicians. One of the few musicians on the Cameroonian musical front that really utilized that, not just to, connect himself to the rank and file, but also to speak, tell the truth to power. He criticized BS government very vehemently in his songs that were composed principally in Kamfrangle. Yeah, so I have that. For Kamfrangle, I do have Speak Kamfrangle pour un renouveau angolais, and I have Requiem pour Angola en Kamfrangle. They are all very satirical works, and I wanted to get in contact with the rank and file, the people that really matter, and that is the people on the ground there.
Yes, exactly. Which brings me to my main question: why do you think it is important for you to write in Pidgin English and in Kamfrangle when the normal expectation would be that somebody who is so accomplished, so articulate in French and English would not want to indulge in the impurities that might be associated with dirtying the French language or dirtying the English language?
Well, Prof, I like your choice of words, the impurities, and we can talk about that for 5 hours. Unfortunately, we don't have 5 hours to talk about the linguistic impurities of Cameroon, which I don't consider impurities at all.
Yes.
In fact, they are riches. They are disenrichment. But Prof, let me underscore. Let me respond to your question very briefly. One, of course, like you said, I am very proficient in English and French. I have written in both languages. I have publications in both languages. But why did I choose to write in Pidgin English? Number one, there are many, many reasons I can give you. Number one is that of, rescuing a dying culture. And what is this dying culture? Is in the English, the Pidgin, the culture of the Pidginophones. Okay, I don't know if I'm creating this word. Yeah, Pidginophones are people who speak Pidgin English. In Cameroon, for instance, if you look at the one language that unifies people across social strata, it is Pidgin English. Research has been done on that. People in Bangwana, Menang, and many people, Achimbe, they've written about the status of Pidgin English in Cameroon, and they've illustrated through profound research that this is the only language that cuts across social strata. Pidgin English connects an educated Cameroonian to an educated Cameroonian. It connects a Francophone Cameroonian to an Anglophone Cameroonian. It connects the educated to the educated. It connects the uneducated to the educated, and so on and so forth. So that's my primordial reason for choosing to write in Kamfrangle, to rescue this dying culture, to rescue this dying language. Well, number two, I wanted to talk to the people that matter to me, and I want to underscore that. Some people may look at Vakuta and say, but he's an intellectual, so why does he care about the rank and file? Well, I'm rank and file as well, because if you look at my origins, I come from the rank and file.
Yeah.
And so you never forget your history. And so I want to talk to my people. And therefore, the language that they better, the only language that is spoken and understood, Professor Nyamji, by Cameroonians who never went to school, is Pidgin.
Absolutely.
They've mastered Pidgin.
Yeah.
Okay? So when I write in Pidgin English, I want to send the message to the people. And of course, you probably know from my writings that I'm also one of the writers that speak truth to power, and I speak that without any fear of consequences. And so, if I have to mobilize people, if I have to mobilize the masses today to take a decisive action in Cameroon, I'm not going to speak to them in French. I'm not going to speak to them in English. I'm going to talk to them in a language they better understand, and that's pidgin. The third thing, Prof, is also the question of availability of knowledge to people across the world. Again, pidgin is not spoken just in Cameroon.
Yeah.
And people need to know that. People need to know that Nigerians read my works. Who speak English? They read my works and they understand it.
Yes.
When Ghanaians who speak English read my works and they understand it. And so I'm not just being local. I'm not just being local. I'm also even going continental, if not to say global. Because when I write in pidgin English, I am expanding my market. And that's important for people to understand that. There's also the question of marketing.
Yes.
Or the consumer public, who is the end product, who is the end consumer, the ultimate consumer of my works, is Africa. It's not just Cameroon, it's Africa.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and this conversation coincides with current resurgence in calls for decolonization and relevance. By academics and their research, relevance of the African writer to the people in Africa, and relevance of the languages of instruction. So I would imagine that your choice of writing in pidgin English would find resonance with current clamors for decolonization. Any comment from you?
Oh yes, Rob. I mean, that's a very weighty question there. Now, let me say this real quick. By choosing to write in pidgin English, I'm not just fighting the what they call the decolonization process in the post colony. I'm also fighting. I'm just contributing very, very, very strongly to the local situation in Cameroon. Because if you look at the Ambazonian genocide that's going on, the Ambazonian revolution is going on in Cameroon today, Prof. The genesis, and I've written tons of things about that. The genesis of that conflict is language. They may talk about the legal process, you know, the English common law and the Francophone Napoleonic law. The language, the problem is, the kernel of that problem is language. How is language used in the legal system in Cameroon? How is language used in the educational system in Cameroon? How is language used in training our armed forces in Cameroon, the gendarmerie, and so on and so forth? So I'm fighting, number one, a war that nobody, I call it an elephant in the house. Nobody wants to talk about the language problem in Africa, in Cameroon, because it's the lion in the house, the elephant in the house, I meant to say. So that's the one thing. Number two is the whole decolonization process. When the colonial guys came, not even the colonial people, this whole thing started with the Portuguese traders coming to Cameroon 500 years ago.
Yeah.
And they started trading with people across the linguistic boundaries in Cameroon. And of course, as they crisscrossed across linguistic borders, then pidgin became the outcome. And so, again, the colonial guys came in 1916. As you know, the Germans came into Cameroon in 1916. And then the whole language thing became even more complicated. So, and at what point are we going to stop being linguistic slaves to the ex-colonizers? That's my question. In fact, Prof, I wrote an article that I'm sure you've probably read that. If not, I will refer you to that one. It's titled The Status of Pidgin English in the Cameroonian Tower of Babel. It's published by the journal in Cambridge, at Cambridge University, the English Today. I'm sure you know about that.
Yes, yeah, yes, exactly.
And in that article, I'm arguing vehemently for the adoption of pidgin English as a national language in Cameroon, in addition to French and English, because of all the reasons that I've given you. Pidgin is the number one language that cuts across boundaries in Cameroon. So, to decolonize a people, you got to begin with your language. So I'm fighting that war. I'm fighting that war myself using my writing. So you have to, first of all, make sure you give the people their language back. like any linguist, I'm a linguist, any linguist knows that language carries a culture. Language carries a worldview. Language carries a people's identity. And so if you take my language away, you've destroyed me. And that's the war I'm fighting in Cameroon and on the global scene, because you cannot talk about the decolonizing Africa. And again, as a literary scholar as well,
yeah,
there are books on that. There are books on the decolonizing African literature by Chimwezu, the Nigerian guy.
Yes.
And so we have to fight that. And I think that my battle is not a light battle, because I know that on the campus of university in Cameroon, like the University of Boya is very notorious for that.
Yes.
They are gunning for the abolition of English. When I look at things like that, Professor Nyamjo, I just laugh. You know what?
Yes.
It's infantile for somebody to sit in his office and think that he can decree the demise of a language. That's
Pidgin English not spoken on campus or something to that effect. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think that what I'm doing here, probably people may look at it and say, but this, what is wrong with this guy? Why is he writing in Pidgin English? Well, I'm fighting a bigger battle that people who are narrow-minded may not even see, because the battle, look, assimilation, okay? The French people came with assimilation, and what did the people like Aimé Césaire do? They came up with negritude.
Exactly, yeah.
And
yeah.
You know about the problem.
Yes, 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 yes.
Negritude was a counter movement against the French assimilationist policy.
Absolutely.
And in the Anglophone the domain, what happened? I think people like Shoinga, they're not talking about the African personality, and then Patlele of South Africa talking about the African personality, and so on and so forth.
Yes.
So these movements are gradually taking root, and
yeah,
we have to fight it on all fronts, I would say.
Yeah. Does it surprise you that you sound very much like a lone voice in view of the fact that in Cameroon, Pidgin is not taught in any of the state universities, to the best of my knowledge, and as you rightly indicated just now, instead there is a systematic campaign to dissuade people from speaking English on university campuses.
Yeah, it surprises me, Prof. It doesn't surprise me a whole lot. I know there are people who are on my bandwagon. I mean, you are one of them. You may not even agree, but your book, I think Stories from Babakwa, is part of it. A lot of it is in Pidgin English.
Absolutely, so, yes, yes.
Yeah, I do have people who are on board with me. And of course, the question, to answer your question is very, very technically, I think this whole thing is, it borders on our failed language policy in Cameroon. As far as I know, as far as my readings take me, Prof., there is no effective language policy in Cameroon that touches on the educational system. In fact, if somebody had to ask me, I would say we need to begin to talk about an African or a Cameroonian educational curriculum. We need to begin to reconceptualize our curricular paradigms and include languages like Pidgin, because without Pidgin, you are leaving out a significant chunk of the population. And so, well, the powers that be in the educational domain, the Jacques Famine Dongos and all the rest of them, they will learn belatedly that this is not a fight they're going to win. They're going to fail ultimately, because you cannot deprive people of the language. So we need to think about how we're going to make Pidgin English one of the languages in our curriculum. Bernard Fondon talked about it.
Yeah.
Tadaju talked about it. They've come up with Tadaju in particular, I think he passed on, peace be upon him. He passed on, but before he passed, he was my professor there at Waikele. And he talked about a trilingual educational policy for Cameroon. And what does that include? He was speaking my language. Come up with an educational curriculum that includes French, English, and a neutral language. And if you think about a culturally neutral language in Cameroon, Prof, it is Pidgin English.
Absolutely.
Because Pidgin English is neutral. It does You don't link Pidgin English to a tribe or an ethnic group in Cameroon. It is a neutral language because it cuts across linguistic borders in Cameroon. And we're going to talk about that, but I think we have five varieties of Pidgin in Cameroon. We can get to that.
Yeah.
Five of them. And so, I know it's a question of delay. It's a delay tactic, but I think that ultimately we will prevail because the language, the message that is going out, it is coming from us, people like us who know stuff about linguistics.
Yeah.
And who know stuff about a curriculum. I'm also one of my masters in the United States is curriculum and instruction.
Yeah.
And so when we talk to people, I believe they should listen because this world is about the cross-pollination of ideas. Probably you can't just sit there in Yaoundé or Boyo and think that you're going to stop the train. There's somebody who wrote a book. I'm sure you know him. Oh my God, those names. But the title of the book is "You Cannot Stop a Moving Train." You cannot be neutral on a moving train.
Yeah.
This linguistic train is moving, and regardless of what the folks down there are doing to stop us from becoming linguistically liberated, we are going to be liberated.
Yeah.
And so let's reconceptualize our curriculum.
Absolutely.
Let's look at our constitution. I happen to, I wear several hats. I happen to be one of the translators at the presidency of the Republic of Cameroon that worked on the 1994 Cameroon constitution.
Yeah.
That clearly states in Article 3 that the official languages of Cameroon and of Cameroon would be English and French, having an equal status, and then that the priority will be given to indigenous languages. Emphasis is mine, but up to today, what has happened to the indigenous languages, bro? They've been relegated to the background, and so we need to fight that battle.
Absolutely, and one would imagine that anybody with some commitment to national unity in Cameroon would embrace immediately or see the richness or in what you are proposing. First about Pidgin English, but then even the next step and something that you have argued strongly for is Camfranglais. In a country that has indigenous or endogenous African languages as well as French and English, to make a case for Camfranglais would be to speak in favor of a common ground, linguistically speaking, or a crossroads, a productive crossroads. Speaking linguistically, then I'm surprised that Camfranglais seems to be frowned upon and to be seen as a distraction rather than something to actively promote in the interest of nation building in Cameroon as we have it today. What would you have to add to that statement of this?
We're saying the same thing here because what is Camfranglais? Camfranglais is a hybrid language that was created, from English and French and a few indigenous languages. If you know the anatomy of Camfranglais, it's not just English and French. Some people think it's just English and French. No, there's a lot of borrowed, lexical items from local languages. Wolowos, for example, is not a French word. Wolowos means or.
Yeah.
Sabak. There are tons of them in there. They all come from global. So again, I think to respond to your question very briefly, it is the same mentality. What is hampering people? What is preventing people? When I say people, I mean the powers that be in Cameroon from recognizing Camfranglais as a language that should be utilized to resolve regional problems. Is the same disdain they have for Pidgin English because Camfranglais is a hybrid language as well. It has not attained the level of a creolized language like Pidgin. Pidgin is clearly a Creole in Cameroon. In fact, when people ask me on international scene, what do you speak other than your mother tongue, I say, I speak Cameroonian Creole. What is that? Well, Cameroonian Creole is Pidgin.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we can go into a whole dialogue about that. So, Camfranglais is akin to Pidgin with a little caveat that Camfranglais I call it a cult language. Cult in the sense that it was a language that was created by the youngsters in order to be able to speak, about things that they don't want elders and law enforcement officers to get wind of. For example, they talk about drug peddling. They talk about drug consumption.
Yeah.
They talk about prostitution. They talk about stealing and so on and so forth, using come from there. So it's a veiled language, and therefore, because it was veiled, it was ostracized by so-called linguistic purists in Cameroon. I say so-called. I say that with a lot of emphasis because they are so-called. And so come from there has suffered the misfortune of being relegated to the linguistic background because it is attributed to, it's associated with the banditry, it's associated with misconduct, it's associated with mischief, and so on and so forth. But having said that, Rob, again, I want to underscore, and that's why I write in Kung Franglais. I have two books in Kung Franglais. I have a theoretical book. You're to blame for that, Rob. You know what I mean. I have a book on the translation of the theory and practice of translating Kung Franglais. So
scholars are doing work
on Kung Franglais. Because Kung Franglais, to me, is almost the same as our pidgin on the other side of the Mungo. And so if we want to talk about a linguistic richness, we should not be trying to kill languages. We should promote languages. And let me say one thing real quick, Prof. For people who don't understand the linguistic configuration of Africa, Kung Franglais.
Yeah.
It's not just in Cameroon. We have the same thing in North Africa, Nushi. If you talk to Professor, to Dr. Wangwi Waguri, she should be able to talk to you about Sheng. Sheng in Nairobi.
Yeah.
Sorry, in Kenya, I meant to say. It's a mixed language between English and Swahili. Nushi is the same, is a sister language of Kung Franglais in Côte d'Ivoire. They speak the same mixture that we have in Cameroon. But they don't call it Kung Franglais because it's not Cameroon. They call it Nushi. Now, if you go to South Africa where you are, Prof.
Yeah.
You probably don't know, probably may not know this, but I'm just letting you know that there's something, there are two lingua francas in South Africa that are very akin to Kung Franglais. One, Tsotsi Tau.
Yes, I know.
Tsotsi is the same like our street guys in Cameroon.
Mm.
So they have a language that they've created called Tsotsi Tau. There's another one, a language spoken in the gold mines, it's called Fanagalo. If you look that up, you get Fanagalo is another language in South Africa that is very akin to our pitch, our Kung Franglais. So, and in Canada, what do they speak, bro? They speak Kan Franglais, C-A-N Franglais. We have Kam Franglais,
yes,
which is Cameroon pidgin, Cameroon French English. And then the Canadians have Kan Franglais, which is Canadian French English.
Yes.
So, Where are we going to go with this whole song, this whole choir about let's kill I call them continental lingua francas.
Yes.
Pidgin, Kung Franglais, Nushi, Fanagalo, Sheng, and all that. They are, in fact, I'm trying to see if I can write a book on that, bro.
Yes.
Continental lingua francas are a wealth. They're not a distraction. They don't impoverish us. They don't subtract anything from us. In fact, we get richer.
Absolutely.
There's a whole lot of research out there that says that the more languages you speak, the quicker you are at analyzing global phenomena. And you and I are probably examples. I mean, we're not less productive because we speak many languages.
Yes, I think on that note, I just thought maybe to conclude. I would like you to send out two messages. One first for your readers who read you in Pidgin English and who read you in Kam Franglais. And the second to others out there who are grappling with the same issues like you, how to represent or to write in a manner that is accessible to the African masses, to the people that matter, to those who share a common experience of the world as you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so first, just take them as you see fit.
Yeah, Thank you, Prof. Thank you for this opportunity. In fact, if I had one thing to say to people who are pigeonophones on the global scene, including, of course, Africa, I would say that they should embrace this language, because this language is a tool for decolonization. It is a language that will, if I were to propose something to the AU, the African Union, other than Swahili, I think they should also consider, they should consider pidgin. Number two, for Cameroonians in Cameroon, they should be aware of the fact that pidgin has about 5 tentacles in Cameroon. We have the graphic pidgin, we have the littoral pidgin, we have the pidgin of the north, which is the fufu, the pidgin spoken by the Fulanis in the north.
Yeah.
We have, the Sawa pidgin, because if you look at it, Southwest pidgin is not the same as Northwest pidgin. And then lastly, we have, the pidgin of the Bible.
Yes.
So those are the 5 categories. And what I would tell them is, stick to your pidgin language. Fight the good fight against government dictatorship, linguistic dictatorship, I meant to say.
Mm-hmm.
Fight it. Keep using it, and make sure that you are not being dragged into this whole fallacy of pidgin is an inferior language, pidgin is a language that should be discarded, and pidgin makes you not speak proper English. I think, again, like I said, you and I are good examples. I don't think we are deficient in writing and speaking standard English, because we speak pidgin. So that's a fallacy that I would like my readers to debunk. Number two, the Kamfra Anglais issue, Prof.
Yeah.
I would tell my readers who are reading me in Kamfra Anglais that Kamfra Anglais has come to stay, regardless of what the policymakers are dreaming about. They're going to fail, because Kamfra Anglais is not a Cameroonian issue. It's a continental, if not a global issue, and they should hold tight to it, try to see themselves, identify themselves, their cultures, their worldviews, and their likes and dislikes inside Kamfra Anglais, because that language represents them. It represents the masses and the people that are going to overthrow the people, those leeches in power, and not people who speak Oxford English. That the people that speak Kamfra Anglais and pidgin, because that's a language that unifies the whole country, and they should hang on to that. Now, for people who are struggling like me, writing in a language that has limited readership, and that is being frowned upon by the so-called linguistic purists, and there are many of them out there, they should stick to their guns. That's my message, that no victory has ever come easily. They got to be able to stick to their guns and continue to write in the language and continue to promote languages by engaging in book readings, organized activities in Kamfra Anglais and pidgin English. Make sure that your books are read by people, advertise yourself, talk about it in Jangi houses, go to Tontins and talk about your books. Prof, correct me if I'm wrong, we have about 4 or 5 radio houses in Cameroon that are in pidgin.
Yes.
There's one in Southwest, one in Douala, one in Bamenda, I think one in Yaoundé, Radio Santo, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
This is here in the West, I don't know what's going on in Africa, we have book reviews that are on radio, on TV, okay? Like Bakunta writes a book about Kamfra Anglais.
Yeah.
Somebody who wants to, who wants to buy my, who wants to support me, who is a literary critic, will do a review and go to the TV and read it out.
Absolutely.
And how people know that there's somebody out there who is fighting the good fight against linguistic. I want to use a word that I'm very fond of, I'm sure you know that.
Yeah.
Linguicide.
Yes.
It's linguistic genocide. That's
absolutely
what we are fighting for. So that was my brief message to the public, Prof.
No, thank you so much, Peter, for making yourself available to share your experience, your wisdom, and your current project with those who take these issues very seriously.